Hi, welcome to another segment of Our Community. I'm Candace Michelle. About 2 months ago, I had the pleasure of interviewing Catherine Wiley about the seemingly perennial question of whether we can or cannot legally have a hospital here in Brookings. Our conversation was sparked by a public forum that was being planned by the South Curry Healthcare Alliance and the Curry County Board of Commissioners. That forum, which was held at SWOC, took place on the evening of Thursday, August 17th, was very well attended and was very informative. Interestingly enough, the next day, the Chetco Bar fire blew up, threatening to cut off access to 101 both north and south of town, and for a lot of us, underscoring the need for a hospital here. I've invited Catherine back to talk about the forum and update us on any progress that's been made. Welcome back, Catherine.
Thank you so much, Candace. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
Thank you. So let's back up a bit. In our last interview, you asserted that a hospital here in our community was a legal option. Can you kind of recap that for us?
Yes. There are two governing forces, if you will, particularly related to hospitals and healthcare, and that's the federal and the state governmental entities. The most significant issue here in our area is the difference between a critical access hospital and an acute care hospital. And without getting tremendously technical into comparisons and so forth, Curry General Hospital is a critical access hospital. The critical access hospitals were purposefully intended for areas like ours, rural and remote. They are set the governing, or if you will, rules and regulations related to them were initially set by the federal government. And the first time that I'm aware that the issue of a critical access hospital was brought up was when Asante did this feasibility study for Brookings relating to whether or not we could have a hospital. One of the important issues that came out of that was their determination that it would be necessary to have a critical access hospital here versus an acute care. The reason being, critical access hospitals are reimbursed at what's called a cost plus basis. In other words, costs of their facilities, costs of their staffing, the actual costs of services can be billed specifically to Medicare and Medicaid, which here in Oregon is the Oregon Health Plan, at that expense plus 1% above that.
Which allows them to continue to operate.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It gives it a higher reimbursement rate than a general acute care hospital. There are other regulations. They are not intended for long-term stays. You're looking at maximum stays of up basically to 4 days. So they are intended, as they are named, to be critical access. And it also is intended to be able to draw providers and services to communities like ours that need the services and don't have a whole lot of money and a whole lot of population to support services.
Right. Because basically, even though we are remote and not a huge population, we deserve decent health care too.
Okay. It's a sensitive spot with me because I you know, having been a healthcare provider virtually all of my life, I am one of those that believes that everyone should have access to quality, cost-effective healthcare. And, you know, that was the goal initially in looking at what would be possible here and what would be advisable. And clearly from the get-go, from the time I was involved over 16 years ago, it was for a hospital. The other issue about a critical access hospital is that you cannot have two within a 35-mile distance.
Because obviously then they would be competing.
They would be competitive. Mm-hmm. They absolutely would be competitive. And that is not, you know, if you have enough population and money to support two hospitals, you probably don't need a critical access hospital to begin with, to tell you the truth. Right. So, but in looking at what was possible, you got to kind of wade through a lot of statutes and regulations and laws and so forth. And what we have found definitively is that the critical access facilities are basically governed, if you will. They have to be licensed. They need to be approved by what's called the Centers for Medicare, Medicaid Services. And the...
Now, is that a federal?
Those are federal.
Okay.
And they are in various areas of the country. The country with, looking at federal health care is divided into 10 regions. We here in Oregon are in Region 10. Region 10 includes Oregon, Washington, Idaho, and Alaska. And so our, what they refer to as the CMS office, that is the Centers for Medicare, Medicaid Services, is in Seattle. And so one of the first things was, is it legal? Is it legal for a critical access hospital, not to have a separate critical access hospital, but could it have a satellite? Because after the feasibility study that was done by Asante, and it was determined that a critical access hospital would be necessary, is when Curry Health District went for that designation for the hospital in Gold Beach. And it makes sense.
Right.
I mean, if you think about it, it makes sense.
Right. The hospital was already there.
So
they went for the designation.
They went for the designation.
Mm-hmm.
And being rural and remote and needing the financial increases that a critical access hospital would afford, it made sense. When they did that, I think that there were some assumptions made, perhaps by many. I don't really know. That because they were then critical access, we could not have a hospital here.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess...
I actually know that I've heard those very things said, so...
Yeah, I guess...
And that's not true?
No, it's not true. Let me get to, to some of what it
sure.
is. So part of it is, I guess I've always been one of those people that if somebody tells me it can't be done, I want to know why. And so you start looking into, well, why can't we? Because if this is the intent and we are proven to have a need, why can that intent not fulfill our need? So we, South Curry Healthcare Alliance, did a lot of looking into and contact with a lot of governmental entities and sources. And the primary one that got very interesting was the contact with with CMS, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services in Seattle. And what was clear was two things. The building here in Brookings on Fifth Street, the existing clinic facility, is already a satellite of Curry General Hospital.
Okay.
In other words, all of the services that are provided on Fifth Street, whether it's medical services, radiology services, or whatever, are billed through the critical access license of Curry General Hospital.
Okay. So it is already a satellite.
It is already a satellite. Mm-hmm. It is already reimbursed at what they refer to as the cost plus reimbursement. And most of us who've been here for a while remember that when that building was being built, we were told it was going to be a hospital.
I do remember that.
Mm-hmm. And so we decided that we would look into it. And in fact, you can go online and there are lists by region of the licensed critical access hospitals with CMS and their satellite facilities. And some satellite facilities include a separate building, for example, or a separate facility for imagery, which would be your mammography or your MRI or what have you. Some of them are clinics, like here at the Brookings Clinic. There are a multiplicity of services that are provided under satellite facilities to a critical access hospital. So the question was to CMS, can a hospital have a satellite hospital? And the regulations absolutely document that that is not only possible, that in many cases it is advisable, because there are also limitations on numbers of beds for critical access hospital. And critical access hospitals are limited to a maximum of 25 inpatient hospital beds. The current hospital in Gold Beach has been built for 18. So even if there were no decrease in the beds currently there, we could legally have 7 right away here under the law of what is allowed. And there'd be more steps to it than just that. But it is absolutely, definitely allowed. And in addition to that, in addition to the 25 hospital beds, CMS allows a hospital to have 10 psychiatric beds and 10 beds for physical, well, for therapy, as therapy beds, which could be physical therapy for orthopedic surgery or cardiovascular therapy. Or right now they've got a program going up at Curry General, which includes speech therapy and so forth, which is a real asset to our community.
Absolutely.
I think the reason that that's important is not only because it expands potential services for our county, but it also allows for utilization of the space there. They've built a very large building. And if I built a building like that, I would not want the space to go wasted.
No.
So how, you know, so there are ways to utilize that space, earn money and have it functional and have it expand services to the community.
Now, with a critical access, so what we're talking about is critical access hospital, which is what Gold Beach is.
That's correct.
And their maximum is 25 beds.
Total.
And the stay is 4 days.
Yes. It is not intended for long-term hospitals.
And that makes sense, right? If you're really sick, you need to go somewhere else anyway. You need to get flown out to Medford or to, you know, St. Joe's in Eureka or something like that if you've got a condition that has to be.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And that goes along with some of the concepts of quality regionalized healthcare. You cannot have everything ever in a community like this. I don't care how much money you have.
No, it doesn't make sense.
It doesn't. No. And not only that, it jeopardizes the safety and the quality of the care. Kind of the bottom line is, you know, even if you have your car repaired, you want somebody who repairs cars on a regular basis to repair your car. If you need help with your health, you know, whether it's your tonsils or whatever it is, you want somebody who is qualified to do that and does that on a regular basis. So there would not be enough volume here, for example, to be dealing with open heart surgeries or brain surgeries or, you know, really other extensive types of care that are needed, right, and require a longer term hospitalization. And, you know, you need to be in cities that have millions of people,
yes,
not, you know,
exactly,
20,000.
Right. So exactly. So what is CMS's stand on all of this?
Well, CMS, actually, and this was interesting to me because I didn't know this. This has also been a learning curve, because we asked what their position was on a freestanding emergency room, because on the one hand, there are many comments that have been made that we cannot have a hospital here, and yet there was a great deal of effort and financial investment in getting a new administrative rule at the state level in order to have a freestanding emergency room here. And there's nothing wrong with an emergency room, but it does not afford equal care of an emergency room in a hospital. And we asked CMS what their position was, since this is a satellite already of a critical access hospital, what their position was on freestanding emergency rooms. And they sent us the statute of theirs and the interpretive guidelines. And so there, a couple of numbers. So their 485.61A condition of participation emergency services states the CAH, that would be the critical access hospital, provides emergency care necessary to meet the needs of its inpatients and outpatients. That's its definition of emergency services. And the interpretive guideline of that regulation states all emergency services must be provided as a direct service in the critical access hospital. The ED, which would be the emergency department, cannot be a provider-based off-site location. Emergency needs of patients must be met in accordance with acceptable standards of practice.
So that sounds to me like they are not really excited about standalone emergency rooms.
So, yeah, that was what we were also wondering. So the question was, in view of the guideline and it's a regulation. In view of the regulation and the interpretation of that regulation, does it mean that CMS prohibits freestanding emergency rooms? And their answer was, well, no, we don't totally prohibit them.
But we're not going to do a dance of joy.
The term that was used in written communication was, we frown on them. And there are reasons.
So what does that mean, that they frown on it? Does that mean that we wouldn't get, that there wouldn't be licensing? Does it mean that there wouldn't be reimbursement? I mean, what does that mean?
I would hesitate to try to interpret their meaning of that. We asked, would it be prohibited? And they said, no, we would not prohibit it, but they would look at it. And the reason, they have reasons for that, and their reasons are that they are intending to safeguard best medical practices for people's services that they're paying for, that they're reimbursing. While there can be an advantage to having an emergency room if it is impossible to have anything else. In other words, that would be last resort, because the law in Oregon requires an ambulance to bring you to the closest emergency room. Right now, people in 97415 have a choice of going north or south. So first, what happens with a freestanding emergency room is you no longer have that choice.
You are taken to that emergency room.
You will be brought to the closest.
Because it's the closest one.
That's correct.
Right. Okay.
And people think that's great, because then I'll be taken care of and so forth. And I can, the issue is that they can take care of the emergent condition and stabilize you, but not take care of you. You will need to go someplace else. Now, granted, already some people would need to go to Medford, okay? And it would be a tremendous advantage with the expansion of the airport to have that capacity here. However, people who need to go, like if you have an appendicitis attack or you need to be hospitalized after an injury, they can sew up your injury, but you still need care after that, or just so many, many things. Mm-hmm. They need to transport you again. So part of what CMS is opposed to is that it entails a higher risk. Anytime you are in transport in a serious or emergency medical situation, there are risk factors. So having to be transported twice increases those risk factors. The other thing is, as people are becoming increasingly aware of, the funds for Medicare and Medicaid are very limited. And if things go the way some people want them to go, they could become extremely restricted. So spending funds for two transportations instead of one to a hospital with an emergency room is very different. The other thing that we have to deal with right here as a literal obstruction is going from here to Gold Beach, as you mentioned with the fire.
Could have so easily been cut off.
Oh.
So easily.
Absolutely. And there's a lot of other things besides, you know, people don't want to think about the earthquake, you know, offshore and the tsunamis and so forth. Mm-hmm. I don't want to think about them either if you want to know the truth.
Right.
But the fact of the matter is there's a lot of other natural disasters.
Every winter there are slides.
That's right. And the road goes out. And I mean, even now, just with the Thomas Creek Bridge having one lane open,
right.
I was going up to Gold Beach the other day. And something occurred where we, going north, we ended up being stopped for two lights. Mm-hmm. Well, if traffic is coming south on that one lane, an ambulance can't go through it. And so it's more difficult for people to be with their families. And it's so, so important. They've done studies about healing. And people heal better when they have the support of their loved ones to be with them.
So if you go to an emergency room and then you are put into ICU, is the ICU part of the emergency room?
Oh, no. The ICU is part of the hospital. And I'll tell you, Sutter, if you needed an ICU, you'd have to go to Sutter because we don't have intensive care units. We don't have that level of staffing. So there still would be transportation needed, just as there could be transportation needed for heart issues or stroke issues where people need to be hospitalized for a longer period of time and need to have the expertise that we don't necessarily have available here. I'm not saying or even trying to infer that having a satellite hospital of Curry General, which is what it would have to be, would solve all issues relating to double transport. They would not.
Right.
There still would be transports that would need to go to Medford, and there still could be transport that would need to go to Sutter Coast. But it would give us equal care instead of a different and lower level of care than those in North County. It also would significantly, this is our hypothesis, 26% of the inpatient population of Sutter Coast Hospital are folks from 97415.
That's a quarter, over a quarter.
That's right.
Wow.
That's right. And they are down there a lot bigger in Del Norte than we are here. Mm-hmm. I don't have the statistics on the emergency room or their outpatient surgery, but it's also significant from the number of patients. And actually, that's patient revenue that is leaving our county that, for the most part, if we had qualified care here, if you talk to most people, they would stay.
Oh, yeah. Who wants to drive for a half an hour if you don't have to?
That's right.
You know,
and
crazy.
You know, another risk, and of course, this is a hypothetical, that if you know that you can't go to Sutter in an ambulance because they would bring you here, would people take even higher risks and try to drive or be driven to an emergency room when you should be being brought by ambulance?
So can we circle back and talk a little bit about the forum? Because that was what was next when you were here for the interview the last time. And how did that turn out? First of all, you might want to tell us who the South Curry Healthcare Alliance is, because I can't even wrap my tongue around that. But
it's a volunteer grassroots group that formed actually after the annexation defeat in 2015. And the thing was, okay, fine. We defeated being annexed. We said we, in so many words, we said we really still wanted a hospital. We're not against an emergency room if that's all we can get. But if we can get what we need, how do we go about doing that? And that's really how the group formed. There are 10 individuals that have been actively involved in a core group meeting on average at least once a month. And
you've been working for years on this.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I was working on it before because I have been working on trying to improve and increase healthcare services in underserved areas almost all my life. It was urban in my prior life rather than rural and remote. But quite honestly, when you get down to it, there's not an awful lot of differences.
Right. Same issues.
Same issues. A lot of the same issues in urban islands that we have here in rural communities. And so we started looking, and we started looking at how did we get to a standalone emergency room. And it was an interesting journey if people, you know, really looked into that and looked into public records and so forth and who was meeting and how it was decided. We have seen documentation that there was discussion going back to 2013 about having an emergency room here in Brookings by Curry Health District as long as we paid for it. And yet folks down here were told that, you know, we didn't have to be annexed to pay for it because they would get reimbursed by the patient service funds generated. And
I do distinctly remember something that was, the information that was out there was whether we annexed or not, we would have an emergency room. And somehow that didn't quite happen. Anyway, can we talk about the forum? Because I really want everybody to know what happened with the forum.
So what we wanted is we wanted to gather, if you will, referring to people like the term stakeholders, to a forum. We had already had a meeting with Ginny Rosso and had,
who
is the CEO of the Curry Health Network. And she met with us in May, and we discussed that we had found that there was a potentiality for Curry Health Network having a satellite hospital here in this facility. And, justifiably, she wanted some more documentation. And that's why, if I were in her position, I would too, before I pursued it. And so that's when we went to CMS and so forth and so on, to the forum. So we wanted to have parties involved. So there was representation from a tribal council member from the Talawa Dene Nation. And I think in some respects that component of our community has quite frankly been overlooked. And they have a great deal to share, both as far as needs and as far as resources when we're looking at health care for our total community.
Now, is it a problem that they're actually in California? They're right over the border? Is that
well, people
problem?
Think they're all in California, but there's a number who live here.
Interesting.
It is an interesting thing because 9% of Del Norte's census data are listed as native. And we have slightly over 2% here, which doesn't sound like a lot, but not having native land, in other words, reservation or rancheria land, it's as far as I know, the highest percentage of native population anywhere in Oregon.
Wow.
2% is high. They're not all local. I worked at United Indian for a number of years part-time, and there are people from native peoples from all over, from Alaska and the Midwest and, mm-hmm. And the eastern coast areas as well. But it is a significant population. So we had representative, we had the city manager and the city mayor. We had the chief executive officer, Ginny Razzo from the hospital, and their chief financial officer, Carr Gerlach, and I, and Sue Gold, representing the county commissioners. That was the panel. We were very pleased to have a facilitator that our state regional solutions person identified and found for us, Robin Harkless. And
she was great.
Yeah, she was really very helpful. She's got unbelievable credentials as mm-hmm. far as both facilitating and mediating. Mm-hmm. And so it's good to have someone like that who is totally objective about process and can help. And it was to look at and to have an open and public discussion about what possibilities are and where people are in what they believe can be and should be made available to the citizens of Curry County.
It was standing room only.
Yeah.
I was surprised and thrilled that so many of our citizens showed up.
I was really very, very pleased with it. And yes, with the turnout, it's a Thursday evening and we try to, you know, it's hard to tell which is the best during the day, during the evening, you know, and pick a time and a day and get the word out as best as possible. But yes, we were very, very pleased with the turnout. And I think it would be very helpful to, you know, to have some follow-up information and so forth. It would be helpful to have more information made available in our newspapers and online. And we hope that we'll be able to get that done.
So what do you feel like was the final outcome of the forum?
At the time of the outcome of the forum, I honestly wasn't real sure because there were some opinions, stated that didn't change at the end of the forum about staunch positions. Emergency room only is, one of the staunch positions that we were hoping could be moderated. And I think in some cases it was moderated because what we were looking for was an agreement to look further into the possibility. You can't expect people to say, yes, we're going to dive off of the diving board if you don't find there's water in the pool. So let's find out what can help us and not harm us and go further. And, obviously, there are financial ramifications and interests, and emergency room visits pay very highly. And the Curry Health Network has some very high debts. I mean, they stated at their most recent board meeting Wednesday night, they cannot take on any more debt. And that is it. They are maxed out on debt. Hmm. And they need to start increasing and maximizing their earnings, their mm-hmm. patient service revenue. Emergency room revenue is very big, mm-hmm. huge. And if people don't have a choice and have to go to an emergency room here, it most assuredly will be of benefit to the Curry Health Network. And again, there's nothing wrong with being a benefit to the Curry Health Network, but what is the optimal benefit to us? So,
I have nothing against making sure that Curry Health Network survives, but my foremost need has to be for me to survive.
Yeah. And I think too, there've been a lot of legal cases on separate and unequal and not equal and not having mm-hmm. Not having the same benefits, whether it be for education or for health or for housing, you know, the social needs, the basic social needs that every human being has. Right. And, you know, and then one would hope that you would build and expand the quality of care. Curry Health Network has hired a quality assurance coordinator. I'm not sure that's her proper title.
Right.
But she was at the board meeting on Wednesday and looking very much forward with years of experience in quality and ensuring quality. And the other issue—
That's a really good first step.
I'm not saying that's their first step.
No, but it's a recent step. Yeah.
And I'll tell you, the other thing that I was really impressed with was there were issues that had been brought up. And there have been issues that have been presented to me by email and so forth, complaints about the level of health care, the sensitivity of health care, of the loss of providers causing difficulties with patient care and continuity of care and so forth. And I will tell you that at the board meeting, they were very open about addressing those deficiencies.
Excellent.
And they gave assurances that they would provide public information on the means by which people could go and follow up on complaints that they have about how patients are, and families are being cared for or not. And, you know, of course, I would always encourage people, my shtick has always been, you know, okay, I think it's very important because if we've made errors and they're not pointed out, if we're not being sensitive, if people are not satisfied, this is a consumer-driven issue, healthcare.
Yeah, right.
And it's very important, not just for your health, but for your well-being, that the care is good care. So it's important to me that they that patients and families also have a means to have a grievance procedure or register a complaint. But on the other hand, I would also hope that people would come and compliment people on improvements and when things are handled well. I'm a big believer in the things going both ways, but also that you want to strengthen positive behaviors.
Absolutely.
You know,
yeah. The carrot and the stick.
Well, yeah, it's kind of a thing, you know, if you want a mean dog, beat it. I mean, you know, it just doesn't work well.
That's
and
right.
I think also people are more open to communication and hearing constructive criticism if they also hear about the positive things that people are trying
right.
to do.
Absolutely. So what was your feeling when you walked away from the forum? Were you encouraged? Did you feel like there was going that people were finally starting to talk to each other? Because it appears to me that there was a lack of, well, certainly at least with the Native population, there nobody. I remember her saying there at the forum that nobody had ever asked them before.
Right. And there is something about being included. I think it's some of the same attitudes, and I'm not avoiding your question, I'll get to it. I think it's some of the same attitudes as far as public disclosure about the hospital and some of the attitudes that people in 97415 had about the annexation, feeling as though they were being brought in after the fact to pay someone else's bills. Most people, if I want to pay a bill, I want to be a part of what was purchased,
right.
And not pay for it after somebody else made a decision on that. And I think that's a pretty human attitude. For the forum itself, I was kind of up and I was kind of down. I was nervous about the turnover, and I mean the turnout, and I was delighted to see not just the number of people, but people from North County expressing themselves and the diversity of people who were there. I'm going to tell you, most of the people I hadn't seen before, and it was nice. And people came up and talked after. So I felt really good about it. there were some issues with the sound system that I'm aware of. It was just that Sue Gold's voice and mine travel further. We did not rig the microphones, that it was
That's
difficult.
Funny.
Well, we heard about that,
oh,
and it
no.
was like we were using the same microphone. It's just our voices. On the other hand, I felt that some people were more amenable to listening to what potentials were than not. And we have had a debriefing meeting. It took a while. It was delayed because of the fire.
I think everything was delayed. Our lives were delayed.
Very
yes.
much so. Yeah. Very much so. Put on anxiety and hold.
Yep.
And
yep.
We also were evacuated. Anyway, there has been an agreement. It's not formal, but that people are willing to look at the potential of a feasibility study. And that was really what our goal was.
So tell me about the feasibility. What is that exactly? What would that
well,
be?
Well, a feasibility study is a very broad term, mm-hmm. obviously. But a feasibility study is what Asante paid for back in 2004 to see if we could have a hospital here to begin with.
Okay.
That was a feasibility study. They cost money.
Mm-hmm.
They're done by various entities, and you come up with questions. And the questions, of course, include, is it legal? Is it possible? We still haven't gotten a definitive on the state's position on a satellite critical access hospital. They have to be licensed by both. And we have sent inquiries, and now we're going to start with another source at the state level because we're having difficulty in getting definitive answers regarding specifically a critical access satellite, mm-hmm. because the state does not allow satellites other than psychiatric facilities for an acute care general hospital. In other words,
okay.
they don't want an Asante or a Providence hospital to be opening up satellites around
sure,
town.
That makes sense.
Right. And but
Gold Beach is not acute. It's critical
that
access.
That is correct. And as I said,
okay.
the primary governance of critical access hospitals is CMS.
Mm-hmm.
And they clearly would support a satellite hospital over their regulations on a freestanding emergency room for
right.
for the,
right.
the reasons that I've already, you know, kind of mentioned.
So the feasibility study would address the legalities, both federal and state. You know the feds.
Yeah,
basically.
Well, I would hope that we could get an answer from the state before we have to pay
that would
a feasibility
be nice.
Study. Yes, it would. And well, because an emergency room wasn't feasible.
Mm-hmm.
The city and Curry Health Network paid a great deal of money to get that and time to get that administrative rule passed to have a freestanding emergency room. So that was not possible to begin with.
Interesting. Okay.
That happened with taxpayer money
mm-hmm.
And a great deal of time and a lot of people involved.
Mm-hmm.
So to say that something like a satellite hospital can't be, if it does need a revision to an Oregon administrative
right.
rule.
It's obviously possible.
Does not mean it's right.
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
If the federal government says absolutely unequivocally it's possible, and they have the foundation regulations for critical access facilities, I do not understand how a state government could say, no, we won't go along with that. I'll give you another example. Basically, the way bureaucratic regulations go is you follow the money. So it's like, if I pay for it, you follow my rules.
Right.
I've seen that in family households.
Exactly.
So it's not that
yes.
different or difficult to understand
right.
Position. California, back in the 70s, established regulations on voluntary elective sterilizations. No other state had done that. And they designed those regulations as protections against the developmentally, not against, but against individuals being coerced into being sterilized, because there were a lot of abuses.
Right.
And it was protection for the developmentally disabled. It was protection particularly because the largest abuses of involuntary sterilization were predominantly ethnic women of color, African-American women and Native American women, and right after childbirth. And so they had very good intentions, and they set up regulations. And the next year, the federal government decided that regulations, protective regulations, were also indicated nationwide.
Hmm.
They are hooked into the regulations for federal funding, which is Medicare, Medicaid,
right.
And
right.
Actually CHAMPIS also, which is military families.
Okay.
And but it's, for the most part, it's a federal and state mix, but the largest component of it is federal. So California said, well, we like our regulations better. And finally, there was a lot of back and forth. The federal government says, well, fine, but then you won't have our money. Well, you know,
okay,
that's
then.
A whole lot of money when you're talking
exactly.
in California about
exactly.
Medicare, Medicaid, and CHAMPIS.
Exactly.
And so California is the only state in the union that has two sets of regulations.
Hmm.
If you are,
interesting.
And it goes by your insurance, it goes mm-hmm. by your It goes by your payor.
Right.
If you are being paid, if your services are being paid by Medicare, Medicaid, or CHAMPIS, you must follow the federal regulations.
Right.
If it's a freestanding insurance company or private pay, you get the state regulations. So the regulations, either you give up the money or you go with the regulations. So it's difficult for me, having been involved in this as long as I have, to think that there could even be a state regulation that would prohibit a satellite critical access hospital.
So then, in addition to looking at the legality, I'm assuming a feasibility study would also look at the financial feasibility.
Absolutely. Not just that. And Ginny Razzo pointed this out, too. There have been changes in facility requirements for hospitals. So even if the number of years ago that the facility here in Brookings was built, even if it were in compliance for a hospital at that time, it may not be in compliance
right.
for a hospital now. So you have to look at what it would cost to get the facility legal,
mm-hmm.
the facility itself legal, how many beds would be indicated, and what would the potential revenue be? You've got to look at it as far as staffing and so forth and so on. Generally, if you are able to expand your patient base, you are generally also able to expand your providers, which not only means that you can increase your numbers of providers, but the expansion or the comprehensiveness of service provision itself. You know, some of the things that people were very concerned about had to do with dialysis and chemotherapy and infusion therapy,
yep.
which are not all one and the same. There are three distinctly separate issues. And Sutter also, just like talking about, we will have an emergency room whether we annex or not, and here we are 2 years later. Sutter also said we will have dialysis, and I haven't seen that happen yet either. It's very interesting how promises are made when organizations or agencies are in competition with one another. So, you know, I think we are 97415 as an entity, as the largest population component of Curry County, having the largest numbers of people who are insured and can pay for their services and so forth. if we were not a viable market, I don't think that Curry Health would have any incentive to even have a clinic here, never mind to want us to have to come to an emergency room. And likewise, Sutter Coast is.
And I can't imagine how we could not be viable. We are the majority of the community, or the majority of the county. We're here in numbers.
Yeah, exactly. We're here in numbers. We're here in need. And I think it's time. One of the most important components of having the forum was to include the public and mm-hmm. to try, first of all, I don't believe that people can make responsible decisions if they don't know what the facts are.
Sure.
And that people have a right to know what the options are. And people need to know that there is a viable option for a satellite hospital here in, and it would be only logical that it be in Brookings and in that facility. It has financial ramifications, both as far as what it would cost and so forth. It also has financial ramifications as far as drawing people into this community.
Absolutely.
As far as development, mm-hmm. as far as economics, when people choose, and if it's us old retired folks that people are looking for to come here and live here and or have second homes here, one of the most important, and I'll use the term pun intended, critical components
yes,
is having
right.
access to a hospital.
That's
and
right.
a lot of people, I think every one of us who's been here for any length of time have known people who have had to move because they have not had access to the healthcare concerns.
I've lost several neighbors.
Yeah.
They have had to leave the area
yeah.
because there simply was
yeah.
not medical care here.
Exactly.
That would.
I picked my granddaughter up in Portland this summer to come spend some time here. And we drove down. And in Dundee, there's a cherry orchard that had public picking of the cherries. And I was with a friend with her granddaughter as well. And, you know, girls from big urban areas and have never had a chance. The woman who owned the orchard said, oh, where are you from? And we told her Brookings. And she said, oh, we used to live there and we loved it, but my dad had to move because they didn't have adequate health care.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I said, well, we're working on it,
I know.
Believe it or not. And she said, oh, I hope. So, I mean, you run into this, mm-hmm.
All over the place.
You really
no,
do.
That's absolutely true. So if the feasibility, so basically the next step, what you're hoping for is that there would be a feasibility study done that would determine
the feasibility
of having a hospital
right.
here, what it would take. How much
right.
it would cost,
right.
you know, all of
right.
that kind of stuff.
Right.
So who would fund the feasibility
study? That was part of my assignment currently.
Good.
There are foundations that will fund, and there are many of them that really specialize in healthcare. Robert Wood Johnson Foundation is one, Mayer Foundation is one that's very helpful that's from the Fred Meyer family. Also really are supportive of small communities in Oregon. Even REI has the sporting goods store has foundation monies. So
basically there's plenty of places to look.
And so looking at some of the Kellogg Foundation is another. So looking at, because you really have to have kind of a targeted grant. Also, foundations do not grant money to governmental entities. So in other words, Curry Health District as a governmental entity, the Board of Commissioners and the City of Brookings as governmental entities could not apply for the grants. You've got to have a nonprofit group actually apply for and administer the grant. And we have not applied for nonprofit status because we're too small, quite frankly. But we are sure that we could partner with a nonprofit group to handle a grant for a feasibility study without too much difficulty at all.
No, I'm sure.
So it's looking at which foundations fund this type of thing and what their funding cycle is. My hope is, because at this point we still don't know when the emergency room will be able to be open, because Curry Health Network needs money as startup until they can start generating revenue from their billings, because doing the service for the patient and then billing, and by the time you get the money, that can be 60,
later.
90 days down, and you can't afford to float something if you don't have the money to float the boat, as it were. So,
we're, and I don't mean to cut you off.
No, that's okay.
But we're almost out of time.
Oh, my.
I know, right?
Too much fun.
How did an hour go by that quickly? I don't know. So again, what I'm going to say is I would love to have you come back, Catherine, because clearly this is an ongoing issue. And, you know, 2 months ago, we were at a forum. And now 2 months later, after a wildfire disaster, we are, you know, a little bit farther down the road. So I would love to have you come back if you'd be.
I'd love to. Thank you. It's so much fun talking.
It really is.
Time.
I know.
Thank you.
Do you have any quick final comments, like how people can get in touch with you if they want to help, or if they've got questions, or where, if there's a meeting that they can go to, or anything?
We do not have the funds or the expertise for a website, but we do have an email address. And if people want to pull out their pencils or whatever, it is all little letters, no dots, no dashes. It is scchca97415@gmail.com. And I will do my very best to respond back to you. Just please be patient with me. I am not an electronic expert, but there are a lot of questions, and I'm hoping that we will be working collaboratively, which also was our goal, collaboratively and publicly, to advocate for our best interests in the area of healthcare. And I thank you for
thank
the
you.
Opportunity.
Thank you, Catherine. And I want to thank you for listening. My guest today has been Catherine Wiley, still trying to get a hospital here. I can't help it. This is our community for KCIWLP, your community radio station. I'm Candace Michelle, and thanks for listening.
The opinions expressed here are those of the individual participants. Curry Coast Community Radio takes no position on issues discussed in this program.